This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Hello and welcome to By the Book. I'm Sharmila Ganesan, and with me, as always, is my fellow wanderer into realms unknown, Lee Chui Lin.
Hello.
Today we are honoring, I think, a day that often doesn't get talked about very much, and that's International Men's Day, which happens every year on the 19th of November. And we have joining us via Zoom, Vijay Dore, who is a, and let me see if I got this right, he said project consultant, lazy reader, and occasional book reviewer. Did I cover everything?
Yeah, project manager, but yeah.
Project manager, sorry, yes. But lazy reader was the right one.
Yeah, kind of lazy reader, yeah.
And the reason we have Vijay with us is because we thought this idea of what men read, I find that we talk a lot on the show about what prompts people to read certain things, how that changes, but also this idea of reading as a way of, in some ways, depicting who you are, what you hope to be. And I don't know whether that's changed over time when it comes to what men are reading today.
I mean, I think we wanted to talk about what men are reading, but also how books and literature and writing kind of play a role in shaping our ideas around, you know, being a man and masculinity. Because, of course, there are these writers who feel very male, you know, and then there are other writers who write primarily about men, but who you don't necessarily look at and go, yeah, that's a guy who's writing for men. And so I think, you know, we've spoken a lot on the show about how can you tell whether a book is, you know, written for men or women? And I think that's kind of one of those tricky questions that we were also going to address today.
Yes. So now we turn to you, Vijay. And I think maybe the easy place to start is, does it matter to you whether a book is written by a man or a woman?
Actually, I mean, that's an interesting question. And I have a funny background story to this. So it's, you know, when I was a child, when I was in my primary schools, I used to read Enid Blyton. I mean, who didn't, right? We always read Enid Blyton's. And I remember Famous Five was one of my favorite books to read. And there was a time when I was leafing through that book and I found the about the author section, and it read Enid Mary Blyton. And I kid you not, until that point, I thought Enid Blyton was a man. And this whole realization just threw me off. And I remember being quite embarrassed about having read a book written by a woman. And, you know, and this is just a reflection of how far we've come, I guess, right? Or how it was then. And I remember as a child, I stopped reading Enid Blyton, probably moved to Hardy Boys or something like that. But to come back to your question, I don't think there is a man's book that I always try to go towards. I read Tara Westover's memoir, Educated, a couple of years ago, and I remember thinking, this is essential reading for men, you know, not just the struggle of a girl growing up in a family with, you know, deeply extremist ideas and practices, but, you know, it's an opportunity to look through her lens to learn about abuse and reflect on the responsibilities we have with the people in our lives.
So I was born and raised, the youngest of seven children, on this really beautiful mountain in southern Idaho. But my dad had some radical beliefs. And because of those beliefs, we were isolated. So I was never allowed to go to school or to the doctor. I didn't even have a birth certificate until I was 9 years old. So when I was 16, I decided to try to educate myself. And I bought an algebra book and just taught myself enough algebra to kind of sort of pass the ACT. And then I went to university. And what I didn't know at that time was I was starting out on this path of education, that would require a lot of my ideas to change, that would require my worldview to change. And that path of education would take me to these great places, Harvard, Cambridge, but it would also take me away from my family.
Having said that, you know, men will always be attracted to the masculine aspects of life, you know, speed, strength, ambition, you know, new discoveries. And men have thrived in being the strongest, the fastest, or the smartest. And these are not negative at all, and we celebrate this, but I don't particularly think, at least at this point in my life now, that I would choose a book just written by men.
So I've spoken about this before. I think for a very, very, very long time, I didn't realize how many men were on my bookshelves versus women. And that is to say that I spent a significant chunk of my life reading many, many more books by male writers than I did women. And now in seeking it out, I think I'm just kind of trying to address that and also just to understand what it is that I was attracted to in those books. Was it simply that they were the ones that were the bestsellers, new out, the things that bookshops tend to display at the front of the shop? And, you know, maybe you just don't explore more or, you know, is it about something else? And I completely understand that. I think it is, I think, probably more driven by the market than we would like to admit in terms of, you know, whose names are more out there. But in terms of, you know, being attracted to things, for example, a name that I wanted to bring up was Tom Clancy.
Chapter 1. The North Sea. Albuschella Oilfield, Norway. Latitude 56 degrees north. Longitude 3 degrees east. Freeze or drown. He wasn't sure which one would come first. It didn't really matter. Either way, Jack Ryan Jr. knew he was going to die in the next 2 minutes.
That is because recently we spoke about Michael Crichton. And when I think about the bestsellers, right, of a certain era, you have your John Grishams, Jeffrey Archer, Michael Crichton, and then Tom Clancy, Sidney Sheldon as well. Like, these are the kind of big airport bookstore names. And Tom Clancy was the one that I always felt was the most male. And I don't know why that is. I don't know whether it's because the books were the most technical or they involved the army. But I do think that there is something to that.
Well, there's that. And I also think, see, all of those things that Vijay just mentioned, the discoveries, the adventure, the speed, the, you know, girls like reading those too. And I think that might be part of the reason why it doesn't mean that women didn't write about those things, but I think for a long time and historically, one, not enough women were allowed access to those experiences, but two, even when they wrote about it, nobody wanted to publish them, right? So the bulk of my sci-fi or fantasy reading as I grew up are all written by men, mostly because those were the only ones that were really accessible to me. I mean, you can argue Enid Blyton also wrote fantasy, yeah? Or Diana Wynne Jones, but then those are like quote-unquote children's books. So when you kind of grow up and you want to read proper adult fantasy or sci-fi, mostly you'd find that most of them are by men. But I'm wondering whether that makes them masculine stories, or are they just stories?
Yeah, I get what you mean, and I think there is a solution in trying to focus on the gender gatekeepers of books, if you will, right? Like, what are the parents and the teachers really exposing the children to in terms of reading? And as you correctly pointed out, a lot of what I find written by women is really interesting and attractive to me as well. And as you said, there are a lot of women who are reading all these things that I said, and it's not really exclusive for men at all, you know.
Vijay, I just wanted to know whether you ever returned to Enid Blyton.
No, actually, I didn't, unfortunately. Yeah. It's just one of those reflections, you know. I think back and I was like, oh my God, I actually made that decision because of her gender, yeah.
Mm. It's funny because famously, and we've talked about this on the show before, J.K. Rowling changed her name to be gender neutral so that more people would buy her books. That was the start of, and you can even argue the fact that it's about a boy makes it a little bit more saleable because girls will read books where boys are the leads, but it's much less likely that boys will read books where girls are the leads.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree. I mean, again, I've moved out of fiction for a very long time now. And, you know, about 5 to 10 years, I've really started reading a lot of nonfiction. But if I pick up a fiction book from my bookshelf, I would be hard-pressed to find one with a lead female protagonist. And I don't know whether it's an accident or, as Lynn pointed out, it's just that most of the books in the front are these sort of male-driven books, or am I subconsciously picking that? You know, now that you ask me, I'm just thinking of that now, but I really don't know.
So Sharmila and I have talked about how we don't read a lot of nonfiction. Most of our reading tends to skew towards fiction quite heavily. So maybe nonfiction is actually a good avenue to talk about language, because we've also discussed whether or not there is a masculine tone of voice versus otherwise. And do you find that in nonfiction, which I think in some instances, if you're talking about things like biographies or even in general, right? There's a lot of style that is also as important in nonfiction as it is in fiction. Can you kind of tell that apart? Does it matter to you?
No, I think if it's especially biographies and memoirs, I love reading them now. I don't tend to choose in terms of gender at all, and it's more of what gives me inspiration, right? Tara Westover was an example that I gave, which I really enjoyed, and I've recommended that to everyone. But on the other side, Shoe Dog, the memoir of Phil Knight, the founder of Nike, was something that was so mind-blowingly great for me, and so much wisdom shared with such humility and openness. Is that really a gender representation? I don't think so. I just feel real life sometimes is more compelling than fiction, and these writings help relate to your daily life, you know, little nuggets of wisdom. But I have also seen that reports that women always tend to read more fiction than men. And that's another really...
Especially as they grow up, I think.
You think so, yeah.
I often find men older, you know, men as they get older tend to gravitate towards nonfiction and articles more than fiction. Anecdotally, I don't have research to back this up.
Yeah, and so then the question is, could it be a man's drive to want to be really useful and productive? And so he then sacrifices the creative side? I don't know, but I say it with a tinge of regret when I say it, because I remember how much I used to love fiction. In fact, I used to write a lot of short stories and things like that, which got me interested in the fiction side of things. But I don't do that anymore for about 5 to 10 years. And again, it's a wonder why this happens.
Mm. Well, we are going to close on that slightly sad note on this side of the break. We are speaking to Vijay Dore, who is an avid reader, reviews books sometimes, apparently wrote short stories before. But we're speaking to him because we're kind of trying to celebrate International Men's Day, which happens every year on the 19th of November, and just get around this idea of men and books, what they read, what it says about this idea of masculinity. Let us know, do you mind the gender of your authors? Do you read books that relate to you? You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Buy the Book. I'm Sharmila, and with me as always is Lynn. And joining us today is Vijay Dore. And together we are marking International Men's Day, which happens every year on the 19th of November. Vijay, you know, before the break, we spoke a little bit about how you were driven away from Enid Blyton because you realized she was a woman as a kid. I wanted to know what else you read as a child.
Actually, I was quite late into reading some of the better books, right? But in my teens, I started reading a lot of books. And the earliest books I can remember and can call as the formative books in my life were books my father had read in his younger days, his teens and his college days, and passed on to me. One of the books, and I thought it was great to mention in this interview, it being to celebrate man, the book is really called The Man.
Senator Watson's bill proposes that the president be prohibited from firing any cabinet member without the express approval of Congress.
Which is another way of making damn certain that you don't step out of line.
Or out of place.
Naturally, we assumed that the bill had been brought to your attention.
We also assume that you will publicly call it what it is, an affront.
I'll take a look at it. I want to thank you, gentlemen, for bringing this to my attention.
This is from the 1960s. This was a work of fiction about the first African-American president of the United States, right? And it goes, you know, he inherits this position of power through what they call a constitutional fluke. So the president, the vice president, the Speaker of the House dies, and they leave him to be the next in line, and he happens to be an African-American. So... the whole book, you know, sort of explores the sociopolitical climate at that time. And you know, individually, he faces so many challenges and attacks that he's not prepared for because he's a simple man. You know, the white racists are trying to get him off. Internationally, he faces a political crisis with the USSR. He faces attacks even from the black activists who see an African-American president as an opportunity to further their interest, you know. And, you know, I just love that he overcomes it all, you know. And this book made such a strong impression on me for his unshakable principles. And he's a simple man thrust in the limelight, and he struggles but never wavers. You know, he's sleepless, tired, gets beaten from all sides, but he never gives up. That really resonated with a young me at that time. So I thought I'll share that book with you.
And who's that by?
This is by a writer called Irving Wallace. And the book's name is The Man.
You know, I was thinking about that idea of, you know, something being formative and kind of relating it back to what you were saying earlier, Vijay, about what men are, you know, attracted to in terms of story in some ways or in terms of character, right? And I feel like a lot of that came through in what you just said, this idea of speed, achievement, principle, you know, all these things kind of are eating into that story. And I was comparing it to what it was that attracted me to male characters when I was younger. And I do agree that a lot of it has to do with doing. A lot of it has to do with the fact that I think male characters are given a lot of agency. They're the ones who are making the story, and everyone else is kind of being shaped by the choices that they are making. And I find that as I get older, the fiction that interests me that is about men tend to be a bit more navel-gazing. I don't know what that says about me, but I am quite interested in writers that tend to look towards or kind of interrogate this idea of maleness. And I, for some reason, they are all sort of neurotic, middle-aged Jewish men, perhaps because they are the ones in the industry of doing this. And I'm thinking about people like Howard Jacobson, for instance, or Michael Chabon. You know, these are the people that I think are writing really interesting stories about men who are perhaps more more fallible, more filled with foibles and regrets compared to the characters that were more single-minded and more sure of their path when I was younger.
Mm.
Right.
You know, it's interesting that you said that, right? Because as you were saying that, I was thinking about probably one of my favorite male characters from a book growing up again. Atticus Finch, he wasn't written by a man. He was written by a woman. But I think that it's what you just said, that in many stories, men exist in spaces where they can do things. You know, they can, and whether you're a man or a woman, reading that can often feel a lot more empowering in some ways, because these are people who are grand and you can look up to them and you can aspire to be like them. Whereas the spaces that women existed in literature for a long time was a lot more internal, I think. And because that's what the world was like for a long time, or it was a story of struggle and personal struggle and sort of forcing that space for themselves. But I think that might also be why, as I grew up, and in fact, I'm hard-pressed to think of a favorite male writer now who is not, say, someone like Neil Gaiman, who writes in genres that I enjoy. So they write, you know, fantasy. I don't like him because he writes good men. I'm not a fan really anymore of complicated male characters, I think. I feel like I've sort of outgrown it a little bit. You know, I used to love Chuck Palahniuk. Fight Club is still one of my favorite books. Bret Easton Ellis, American Psycho, you know, all of this sort of the breaking down of the male psyche. It was hugely exciting for a while, but I feel like I haven't been interested in that for a while now, because I think I want to hear new stories about men.
Mm. Yeah, you're right. And, you know, just to go back to when you mentioned Atticus Finch, right? It's another character I really loved when I was growing up as well. But and you can compare Douglas Dillman, who's the first Black president in The Man. You compare him side by side with Atticus Finch, and you know, here's one guy who was always treated unfairly, and then assumes the highest position in the country, and how he was able to still be fair, dignified, and not lose himself. And then you compare that to Atticus Finch, a white male lawyer. Seemingly had it all, didn't need the public backlash of representing, what was his name, Tom Robinson, I think his name, right? An alleged Black rapist. But he did it, and in doing so showed a lot of courage and compassion and firmness of principle. So this seemingly opposing conditions inspires me that at any position, your soul needs to be intact. And all through life, I think we are just finding that soul and trying to stay true to it, you know? And even now when I read nonfiction like memoirs, I try to look at those parts because that really gives me a lot of inspiration.
So I have a question in some ways for all of us about how we relate to books. I'm curious about, so I'll go first. I mean, in terms of what I relate to, in some cases, it is the character, but it is not the first thing I look for. So generally, when I read a book, what I'm looking for is an absorbing story and then beautiful language. And then, you know, a really compelling central or side character that I can root for or feel like, oh, you are my avatar in the story. But I find that if that's not around, I can still kind of make it. And I don't know whether, again, to go back to something we said, you know, for a long time, you may not necessarily have seen someone who looks like you being in the position of the central character of the book anyway. So, you know, it's something that you just kind of learn to look past. Go ahead. But that's how I relate to books and the stories within them. Do you each need a personal connection with characters? And in that instance, does gender enter the picture at all?
I think, you know, just picking from the three that you mentioned, Lynn, I think language is one of the first ones that I really enjoy. I'll give a quick example without going into details. Lolita is one of my favorite books, right? Purely for the language that Nabokov uses. But obviously, it's not a guy that I'm inspired by and never want to be like him. But, you know, the language is so beautiful and you know, the feelings that he shares in such flowery language really attracted me. But I think books that stay with me are the ones which have a combination of all. And the character usually comes to you even after you've finished reading it. And after a while, you think about it and you go like, wow, you know, this guy is so inspirational. So I think just to pick up a book is always a language to start with. But for the book to stay the years, I think it's got to be a character.
Mm. For me, it's story, I think. So maybe a little closer to Lynn in that sense. Character does matter to me, but I think, again, it's one of those things where the character doesn't have to be a character I relate to. It doesn't have to be a character I care about at all sometimes, as long as the story is compelling, but the character feels well-crafted. So then it doesn't have to necessarily be a character that I identify with. And language depends on my mood and what I'm looking for. Because if I'm reading a children's book, I may not necessarily be as invested as if I'm reading, you know, something where I've actually got time to sit and invest in how beautiful the language is. But that's actually an interesting thing to think about, because it plays into, again, when you tie it back to the idea of masculinity, how do you actually build that idea of masculinity in a book, right? Does it come from the character? Does it come from the story? Does it come from the language? Or is it a combination of all three?
Yeah, I would think it's a combination of that setting and you know, obviously the story and the plot plays a major role in bringing out these traits that, you know, you look forward to a man, right? You know, another book that I could think about is Of Mice and Men by John Steinbeck.
And then two men emerged from the path and came into the opening by the green pool. They had walked in single file down the path, and even in the open, one stayed behind the other. Both were dressed in denim trousers and in denim coats with brass buttons. Both wore black, shapeless hats, and both carried tight blanket rolls slung over their shoulders. The first man was small and quick, dark of face, with restless eyes and sharp, strong features. Every part of him was defined: small, strong hands, slender arms, a thin and bony nose. Behind him walked his opposite, a huge man, shapeless of face, with large pale eyes and wide sloping shoulders.
That entire plot was just so depressing, and you think about how they still kept that dream throughout the whole time. It's just one of those things that you can never forget. It's something that I read in my teens again, and I would never forget how there was so much loyalty between George, the character, and Lenny, who was mentally disabled, and he was causing so many problems for him, but he stuck with him, and till the end, he took such a risk in ending his life so that he doesn't go through suffering. You know? Mm. So the plot is there, but it's a vehicle to bring out these expressions of the character, which really I look forward to.
That's such a great example, simply because I love Mice and Men. The first time I read it, I couldn't eat dinner. Like, I finished it right before dinner, and I was just like, I can't. This breaks my heart. But it's one of those books where I would say I agree with you entirely. Where even though for me characters traditionally kind of in the third rung, it pushes it up just because they are so compelling. But also they're great. Examples of different types of masculinity, right? In terms of size, for instance, there's that size disparity. There's somebody who behaves like a child and yet everybody treats him like a man. And so, yeah, I think that that's a really interesting example of how maleness in a story can be explored.
Mm. We do need to wrap up, but I thought it would be nice to end with, we've mentioned a lot of titles, but I thought it would be nice if each of us could recommend one book that you think that's either about a man, by the man, doesn't really matter, but kind of depicts an idea of being masculine or being a man that you would recommend.
What I'm going to talk about is something that I've brought up on the show before in brief, and that is A Brief History of Seven Killings by Marlon James.
Listen. Dead people never stop talking. Maybe because death is not death at all, just a detention after school. You know where you're coming from, and you're always returning from it. You know where you're going, though you never seem to get there, and you're just dead. Dead. It sounds final, but it's a word missing an ing. You come across men longer dead than you, walking all the time, though heading nowhere. And you listen to them howl and hiss because we're all spirits, or we think we're all spirits, but we're just dead.
Well, I mean, it's not A Brief History. So if you've even looked at the book, never mind read it, it's just like this giant book. But also it tells so many interwoven stories about men in a time of flux in a country, and all of it focusing around, of course, this one almost mythical figure in the form of Bob Marley. And so there's this idea of mythos, there's this idea of masculinity and what it means to be masculine in a violent world. And all of it is told with such, ooh, you know, such visceral prose and language and patois. And it's just like, it's such a great read. It was what came to mind when I had a suspicion you would end on this question.
Well, I'm going to pick up on that idea of mythology and very quickly jump in with mine, which is I'm going to take it a few years back because I'm going to recommend something for younger readers, the Percy Jackson series by Rick Riordan.
Where Percy Jackson came from, it's certainly not something that I ever anticipated doing. It was really my son. He was having a tough year in school. He was in second grade. And he didn't like reading, he didn't like writing, he would do anything to get out of doing homework. And then we found out that he's ADHD and he's dyslexic. And so of course, he had one saving grace. He loved the unit that his class was doing on Greek mythology. So I started telling him stories at home to keep his interest in school. And when I ran out in desperation, I made up Percy Jackson, and I just completely made up this kid who's the son of Poseidon, and he has to go across the United States battling monsters. And my son is the one who told me to write it down.
The reason I'm recommending that is because if we go on the premise that it's a little bit more difficult to convince boys to read books that are not about boys, this is a series that is about a boy, but does such a good job of surrounding him with such diverse characters and his interactions with other characters, and at the same time explores so many facets of what it means to grow up as a boy, you know, come into yourself, grow up without a father, learn to find different figures who can be your inspiration. So I think it's a great read for any child, boy or girl or otherwise, growing up.
Okay, so I think, you know, because I mentioned the men earlier, I'm going to stick to that. And also because I think not many people would have read it. I know everyone I recommended to haven't even heard of it, right? So I think The Man by Irving Wallace, purely because I think we need to move away from glorifying the reckless man, the extravagant man, the brutal man. How about a principled man? You know, how about the compassionate man? The man with a combination of intelligence and humility. I think it's time to make it sexy being a good man. And this book, The Man, really covers that. And because then we have a man with all that drives a man to succeed, coupled with the basic requirements to treat everyone and everything else around us with a lot of love and compassion. And I think that's what the world needs now. So I'll recommend The Man.
Well, that is a great note to end on. And if you haven't guessed already, the theme of today's show was men, books, masculinity, literature. And that's because the 19th of November is International Men's Day. And so we thought we'd mark that day in our own way. Thank you, Vijay, for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
If you have thoughts that you'd like to share with us, if you have recommendations, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
My family's history was divided. So there was before the war and there was after the war. And I was born 7 years after the war ended. The war ended in 1970. I was born in 1977. But I always felt that the war was present. But at the same time, in some ways, it was a presence that was absent. Nobody really talked about it, but it was there. I wanted to write a history for my generation of Nigerians. We did not learn about Biafra in school, because it's a part of our history that I think we're still so uncomfortable about that we don't want to talk about. And I want us to talk about it. I think there's a kind of historical memory that is very important for us to have if we don't want to repeat it.
And that brings us to footnotes. And from talking about men for quite a large portion of the show, we've decided to dedicate our footnotes to talking about books for women, or by women, rather. They just recently announced that the Women's Prize for Fiction has awarded a winner of winners in conjunction with the 25th anniversary of the award. And the winner is Half of a Yellow Sun by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, something that I think was hailed by many people who are pretty big fans of hers.
Yeah, so it's very exciting. I actually saw this first and foremost on her Instagram. So it was her social media.
It's so typical of her.
Correct, because she's she's someone who's actually very active on those platforms. And so I first encountered it on her Instagram when she posted it. And I was like, oh, well, there you go. And I think that Half of a Yellow Sun, so is sometimes, she's a little bit of a rock star writer at this point in time, right? She's kind of this literary big name. She's got a, like we alluded to earlier, a big social media presence. She's quoted,
done a TED Talk.
She's quoted by Beyonce. You know? So she is one of those authors who has that kind of presence. And so I find it interesting that the winner of winners is actually, she was really young when she wrote this. She was young when she won the Women's Prize the first time round for it. And so it's like an interesting throwback to her earlier work.
She was 29, I believe, when she won it. Yeah.
Which is mad.
And interestingly, and I think this is connected to all of the things that you just said, she's actually only written one novel after that. Not that that's a problem. I don't think authors need to be churning out books. But it's interesting that, I suppose my question here, or rather, I'm curious about, are they awarding that book? Are they awarding her contribution to how we think about feminism and we think about female writers? Are they awarding a body of work? I mean, you know, on paper, they're awarding just one book. But if you look at the names that she beat out Lionel Shriver. She beat out Zadie Smith. Also big presence writers in the world of female literature. And so I kind of feel like the fact that she's a rock star had something to do with the fact that she was awarded this.
That's interesting because I don't entirely agree. Simply because the book itself is very meaty. It covers a lot of ground. So it looks at the Biafran War, right, through the lens of five different characters. And so it kind of encapsulates a moment in history, but it's also a moment in personal history. And she talks about this. You know, these are stories that she was told by her father, who was Nigeria's, I think, first ever professor of statistics. And so the fact that the book is interested in the intellectual lives also of Nigeria, you know, that moment in time.
And not just women.
No. So I think that For me, the book covers so much ground. It is both so political and personal and historical that if you told me that this is the winner of winners, I would say, well, yes. I mean, it seems like the kind of book that a prize like the Women's Prize, which is interested in these sorts of stories, would award.
Mm. Well, I don't think I meant it to say the book itself is not great.
No, no, yeah. That's not how I heard it. Mm. But yeah, for me, I think it's, when I saw which book it was, I thought, yeah, that makes sense. Mm,
it's a deserving winner. I love Half of a Yellow Sun. It was the first thing I read by her. And then I read Americana. Well, actually, I've not read her other two novels. So I've read Half of a Yellow Sun, I've read Americana, and I've read her essays. I do think, though, that for me, it's almost like a prize like this is both for the book, but it's also symbolic of a larger idea of what it means to be a writer in today's world. And in some sense, someone like Chimamanda is probably more representative of that than, say, a Lionel Shriver.
Mm-hmm.
Zadie Smith actually would have been a similar sort of winner, I think. But the fact that Chimamanda comes from the developing world, that she tells stories that are not rooted in Western culture, I think all of this adds to, I sort of just adds to this idea of how literature involving women, written by women, has evolved.
That's also reflected in what she said about winning the prize. So she spoke pretty movingly about how she said it's a cliche to be honored, but I'm honored, you know. And she also said that this prize in particular means a lot because the prize is interested in highlighting lesser known worlds, lesser known writers, lesser known countries and communities. So I think to that point, you're absolutely right in that in terms of what the prize represents and who she is being a part of that, it does matter. And she acknowledges that herself, actually, in terms of what she said when she was given the prize.
So let us know, have you read Half of a Yellow Sun by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie? It did just pick up the Winner of Winners Prize in conjunction with the 25th anniversary of the Women's Prize for Fiction. Tell us if you like it. Tell us if you intend to read it. Are you attracted to prizes like prize winners like these? You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.